Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Previously on Chaotic Normal, the crew of Melora's Borealis with the enchanted Ewer of the Ancient Ones in tow finally landed on the Druidic Grove known as the Azure Stand. We make our way further into what we hope is the center and destination of our journey, but not without a few obstacles in our way. Where we left off, we found a ship somehow in the middle of this grove of mangrove trees, with a number of living skeletons aboard. Will we be able to deal with this undead menace, or will we be the ones joining the dead? Let us find out on Chaotic Normal, the Shattered Isles.
Everyone except for Jules is surprised. Jules, you're surprised, but you're mid in foreship with these skeletons.
I actually can't be surprised.
All right, Rubert, from below water, you feel the glow of your weapon of warning, and look as the skeletons start forming themselves together. You are not surprised.
Are there any down here with me underwater?
Yes, there are three.
All right. I'm going to start fighting these three. Are they all, like, next to each other?
They're within, like, 10 feet of each other.
Okay. So I could be adjacent to two at a time.
Basically, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get in between two, and then I'm going to attack one and use a slashing flourish to deal extra damage to the one next to me as well. I'll attack one, four. That's going to be 21 to hit.
21 to hit. You easily attack that skeleton.
So that's going to be 8 slashing damage and then 5 to both of them adjacent to me.
8 and 5. All right. What kind of damage is that? What is that?
Slashing.
And that's like it. What was the attack called again? The attack mold.
Slashing flourish.
Slashing flourish. All right. Well, it cuts around, slashing into one, and then slides across to the others, damaging everyone beneath the water. And because you have a swim speed, you don't have disadvantage, right?
Yep.
That's dope. You move deftly underwater, slashing across all of them.
It was 8 to the one I was attacking, and then 5 to all of them within 5 feet of me.
Does swimming speed make it to where you don't have disadvantage underwater?
Yes.
Where's that writ?
Underwater combat, 5e.
Alright, cool. So you slash down, moving gracefully, your body moving too gracefully underwater as you hack down into them. So sorry, it was 8 and then 5 to the two you were adjacent to?
Yes.
Okay, so one of them's still at full, and the other or the one of them takes 8 plus 5. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So one of them dies, popping apart in broken bones, while the other is slashed partially.
I'll use my second attack against that one that I partially hit.
All right.
That's a crit. 7 slashing damage.
7 slashing damage. You slash into it, almost breaking that skeleton apart, but not quite. Jules, up on deck, you were surprised by these skeletons. Or sorry, you weren't surprised due to your detect magic, but 4 skeletons begin forming around you on the deck. You look over the railing behind you, and about 30 feet below is the canoe where Celeste is reading Darwin Nash's... she's over in the row... Or from the canoe, she's reading Darwin Nash's fortune and telling him... predicting his future and past with the Taroka deck. What do you do, Jules?
I'm hoping they'll recognize me as a semi-undead brother. I just look inward and I cast Death Ward on myself.
Nice. And do you have the class feature for Warlock of the Undying that makes it to where undead have to roll to attack you?
Yep, Among the Dead.
Among the Dead? All right. One of the... it's like exoskeleton's turns. One of them comes moving towards you. He looks at you quizzically, and what kind of save do they have to make?
Let's see. If an undead targets you directly with an attack or harmful spell, that creature must make a wisdom saving throw.
So he raises his sword as he comes towards you because he draws forth a scimitar, a pirate scimitar from among his wreckage. Cutlass, there we go. He draws it forth, looking at you as if to attack. The skeleton got a 12. It ignores you. It ignores you, moving past you to the railing, where it looks down to the sight of Celeste and the others, and jumps overboard, landing onto Celeste's boat. Celeste, it lands down next to you, rocking the boat next to you. The skeleton, you hear part of its bones break as it takes a few points of falling damage, and it's landed next to you there. It had to dash to get that distance, though. It didn't have to dash because it fell that far. And it brandishes the blade, swinging down into you for critical hit. The blade arcs across you for 7 slashing damage. So you're sitting there reading your Taroka when the whole boat rocks and a skeleton jumps down on top of you, slashing for 7 damage. Other skeletons move to join. Another one jumping past Jules, also landing down next to Celeste on the canoe below. Celeste, 10 to hit.
That's a miss.
And then another jumps past, trying to land onto the rowboat. This one also successfully lands on the rowboat, striking at Nash, who cries out, "Ah!" as it cuts into him. He goes, "Guffaw! Ah!" And then another skeleton runs up towards Jules, studying Jules, and also fails, so also lunges overboard, trying to land on the rowboat, and this one fails, splashing down into the water. So the skeleton splashes down into the water, sinking into the murky depths. Meanwhile, Celeste, you are surprised by these skeletons who have just landed around you. And,
baby.
Zelnern, you suddenly hear the clicking of bones about you. The light streaming in from the holes created by the trees who thrust up, but you are also surprised, and then very surprised, as 2 skeletons rush up with cutlasses and start slashing into you for 15 to hit.
That was a mess.
And then 16 to hit.
Mess.
They both clang hard against your shell. Phil, you have just turned your head away from that skeleton up in the tree with the crossbow and are surprised as you see Jules suddenly attacked and assaulted by all these skeletons on midship, who then jump overboard onto the boats with Darwin Nash. You're surprised by it. Rubert, down there at the skeletons in the aft, they descend on you, moving through the water, their blades moving heavy as they drag through with disadvantage here. One would have been a 20 to hit, but is instead a 4. The next stabs at you for For instead of a 14, it's an 8. So the blades move slowly. You dodge by them without difficulty. You watch as another skeleton has plunged overboard, is sinking down, hits the bottom of the water, and starts crawling his way towards you to join in the next part of the fight.
No.
The one who missed up above. The skeleton in the tree sits itself up, grabs that heavy crossbow it was ratcheting up, aims it down at Jules, and there is a loud twang as it fires down at, sorry, at Phil for 23 to hit, Phil.
It's a hit. I don't have my shield equipped either. I have 16 AC right now.
You take 11 piercing damage. The bolt cuts by your shoulder, and you see to your horror as you look up the skeleton ratcheting another crossbow bolt in. Darwin Nash, frightened, disengages and moves to the back of the boat, shouting, "Help! Rubert, what do you do?" Down beneath the waves, one skeleton almost destroyed, one skeleton next to you, and another one moving towards you through the murk.
I will use another slashing flourish to attack the one that is uninjured next to me, while also getting the other one in my, like, as I do, like, a spinning slash underwater, sweeping my blade around. That's going to be 18 to hit.
18 to hit's indeed a hit.
So against the one that's undamaged, that's just going to be 4 slashing damage, and then 4 slashing damage to everyone within 5 feet of me.
Nice. You break another skeleton. You significantly damage this skeleton that's just piled on top of you, and there's still one skeleton coming towards you. Do you want to attack him again?
Yeah, I'm going to attack the one next to me again.
And are those flourishes, they use your bardic inspirations?
Yes, they do.
That's fucking dope.
They also increase my movement speed by 10 feet. But, that's cool. So it's going to be 13 to hit against the skeleton next.
Direct hit. You cut through his pirate's leathers.
And then that's going to be 8 slashing damage.
And that skeleton shatters beneath the waves.
From here, can I swim outside towards the ship?
Like towards the Naughty Dreams? Yes.
Cool.
What's your swim speed?
40. But
all right,
with the easily. Flourish, it adds an extra 10 feet, so 50 swim
speed. Yeah, I mean, you were only 10 feet below water to begin with, so you swim up and break the surface next to the crew where there's 2 skeletons on the canoe and 1 skeleton on the rowboat.
Okay, so from underneath the water, I'm going to use my bonus action to summon a tentacle of the deep next to Celeste.
Oh my god.
As a tentacle, like an inky black tentacle, emerges between the two ships, and then that inky black tentacle is going to strike one of the skeletons next to Celeste.
All right, the one who kind of fractured its femur when it landed.
The tentacle only gets a 7 to hit that skeleton.
It whacks against the wood and does not hit the skeleton.
Cool, that's
my turn. Spooky. Jules, what do you do? The skeletons all dodged you, but you look over the deck and you see that your friends are being attacked right beneath you. Celeste being flanked on her canoe by 2 skeletons. And you're like basically right over him.
And then a tentacle
attacking Rubert or some water demon wearing his visage in the water, and Darwin Nash being chased around the rowboat or the Naughty Dreams by a skeleton.
So what do you do? Looks like Celeste is covered, even though she's being flanked, and it seems like Darwin Nash maybe needs some help. So I'm going to cast Toll the Dead on the one in Darwin Nash's boat.
All right. What does that require of him again?
15 wound save.
Well, I got a 13.
A 12. And is that one missing any hit points? No.
No, it was at full.
Okay. That's 2 damage.
The skeleton is drawn back towards death as you pull forth the sailor's devil upon it, undoing whatever deal that pirate made in life with the devil. But the thing holds strong. Are you finished, Jules?
That's me.
The midship skeletons, one chases Nash, swinging at him. Nash dodges underneath its blade. The 2 that are flanking Celeste cut at her rapidly for 5 to... Sorry, for, 5 to hit, and his dice rolled 3 times in a row, and then gave me a critical. So another critical hit, Celeste.
Okay.
for 2 plus 5, 7 plus 2, 9 slashing damage as a blade cuts against you. And that was those skeletons. Celeste, you are shaken free of your reverie, bleeding from a few cuts where these creatures, undead, have slashed you. There's two skeletons on the canoe with you. What do you do?
I'm going to jump to the other boat.
Another boat? All right, you'll take two attacks of opportunity unless you can disengage.
No, because I want to cast Moonbeam.
Okay, the skeletons slash at you. One for 12 to hit. And one for 18 to hit.
The 18 is a hit.
You take 4 points of slashing damage as you land across the rowboat, shaking as you leave the canoe behind. In fact, the force of you jostling the other canoe causes one of the skeletons to topple to the ground. As you land on the rowboat, the Naughty Dreams is sturdy enough to hold. You're casting Moonbeam?
Yeah, so I am standing on the other side of the rowboat, and I'm going to cast Moonbeam on the skeleton. I'm going to place it on the skeleton that's next to Nash.
Hell yeah. Oh, like it's on the same boat as you? All right, so yeah. The Moonbeam comes coursing down, alighting itself on him. Moonbeam, Moon Prism Power. All right, the Moonbeam comes coursing down. What does that do to the skeleton?
So he has to take a con save.
Or when it starts its turn there, okay. Which is about to happen. So, it's when he starts his turn. So, the radiant light sears down on the skeleton. It topples back, clearly burning in it. And there you finish, Celeste's move and action.
I think as a bonus action, I can turn into starry form.
That's true.
So, I'm going to turn into the Healy one.
Form of an ice.
Form of a chalice.
Form of a chalice.
All right, Celeste goes chalice mode.
But the stars, like, they were already shiny on my body, which was kind of cool, because you're in a mangrove that's run by druids.
All right. Zelnern, what do you do? Below deck, you've come to your senses. Skeletons are rattling their cutlasses down on your shell. There's a skeleton on either side of you.
Oh, stop that. I'm trying to investigate here.
And I rage. And then I attack the closest one with my radiant-infused war axe. Great axe.
What is that?
Didn't someone give me a radiant infusion? I have it on my thing here.
Oh, is that
yeah, Phil did.
That's
yeah.
dope.
Phil gave that to him.
That's dope. What does that do?
And it just gives a plus one and deals radiant damage, I believe. Is that right?
Let's look it up. I think it shines light, too.
Oh, well, look, I did have light. I should take it out for that next time.
Let me look.
I also think you can, when you hit something, you can make it make a save or be blinded as well.
That's sweet.
All right, so you're hitting it?
Yeah, 17. I'm going for a weak bone.
Plug that.
17, that easily hits.
All right, so that is 15 damage.
I don't see anything about the artificer infusion doing any sort of blinding. 15 damage, you said?
Yep.
One hit, you just shatter the skeleton. It makes that noise in Skyrim the skeletons make when they break.
Headphone around. Oh, my headphones just died. I turn around, and I go to the other skeleton.
Join your friend in Undeath.
For 14 to hit.
That's a hit.
Nice. For minimum damage, but that's not too bad right now. 8.
The skeleton is wounded, but not destroyed. As you shatter one, you whip around, breaking into him. Do you have any bonus action attacks, or is that it?
A bonus action to rage.
Get angry? Did you say you bonus action to get angry?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Zelnern. The skeleton below deck swings back at you, Zelnern, his blade cutting into you for 15 to hit, which I assume is a miss. It clangs off your hard shell. Phil, you've just been shot by the skeleton in a tree. You look over the deck and you see there's a bunch of skeletons down on your boats looking to clear everyone off of your boats, and the skeleton in the tree is knocking back another crossbow bolt to attack you. What do you do?
I consider shooting my arcane firearm at my boat, but I don't want to catch it on fire, so I look to the skeleton in the tree, and I shoot it for 11 to hit.
11 to hit is not a hit, unfortunately.
And I miss, and I end my turn.
Your firebolt explodes out, but doesn't hit him. He looses his crossbow bolt down on you for 6 to hit. It thuds into the deck. Darwin Nash disengages from this skeleton, and or actually dodges, kind of caught in the corner, not wanting to get seared by moonlight. And so he dodges to try and dodge it. Rubert, what do you do?
So there's one skeleton fell off of the canoe.
There's one skeleton in the water beneath you. There is one skeleton down below deck with Zelnern. There's one skeleton in a tree high above you. There are two skeletons on the canoe right next to you, and there's one skeleton about to be seared by radiance on account of Celeste.
All right. So from the, one of the ones on the canoe, I'm going to use lightning lure to pull it off of the canoe into the water.
Is that a cantrip or a spell?
It's a cantrip.
That's dope. All right. What kind of attacks you got?
It needs to make a DC 15 strength save.
All right, Skellington, plus zero. I rolled a 2. You yank that skeleton. I don't want to say you yank it off, but you tug that skeleton off.
Yeah, so it lands next to me.
Much better.
It takes 6 lightning damage.
Bazat! It lands in the water as the lightning zaps into it. You can make it vulnerable, but you're also going to get shocked. Do you want that?
Yeah.
All right, the lightning explodes into it. The skeleton breaks, but you also take the 6 damage since you were in the water next to it.
Totally fair. It's, that jellyfish tentacle snaps out at it and pulls it towards me, and then I just, like, erupt in, like, lightning as my entire body, like, shudders and lightning is thrown off of me as we both take the damage.
That's pretty dope.
And then with my bonus action, I'm going to make that tentacle attack the skeleton on the ship next to Darwin.
Dope.
As the tentacle gets a 23 to hit.
23 to hit's indeed a hit. And the skeleton's like toppling over the deck.
As the tentacle does 5 cold damage.
It chills into the skeleton but does not destroy it.
That is my turn.
Jules, what do you do? You're up aboard deck. You see there's one that's damaged on a canoe, one who's burning in radiant light conjured by Celeste, and then you see that there is another skeleton deep underwater, and then you see a skeleton in a tree above you.
I'm going to give another Toll of the Dead to the one next to Nash.
Even though that one's about to get blasted by Celeste's radiance, so if you do nothing, it'll die.
No, of course not. I do. Right. The skeleton in the tree.
All right, you aim at the skeleton in the tree.
Yep, and that one's undamaged, right?
Yes.
I only do 11 damage then.
All right, and he did fail, so you damage him. He blasts back, stumbles in the tree. He drops his crossbow to the ground. It thuds hard next to Phil. Celeste, what do you do? Wait, what are those?
Wasn't there another skeleton in front
of
me?
Oh, I deleted the skeleton whose turn it was to do midship. He was supposed to go
dead.
Right there. All right, that skeleton starts his turn burning in your moonbeam. So he has to make a con save. I got a 4. So you get to deal 2d10 radiant damage to that skeleton.
3d10, because I did it at a higher level.
That's dope.
9.
You blast that skeleton apart. Thanks to Jules' original damage that he dealt to it, the radiance is enough that it shatters that skeleton. It breaks apart as death and light obliterate this undead creature. And the moonlight shines down. I hope it doesn't damage objects. Nope, it's creatures. The moonlight shines down, illuminating the naughty dreams and all of the naughty dreams it's ever had.
Thanks.
So, Celeste, that was on the skeleton's turn. It's your turn now. What do you do?
I am going to move the moonbeam to the other skeleton by me, and then I'm going to cast Healing Word on myself.
So the moonbeam slides over, illuminating the skeleton on the canoe, and then you conjure forth a healing light and empower yourself?
Yeah, and with that comes the chalice's healing too that I'm casting on myself.
Dope.
I'm rolling so low. I got 10.
That's solid. All right, so you restore a significant amount of health, proving to yourself you won't die here. Zelnern, below deck, you have a battered, broken skeleton with you, and you hear battle raging outside. What do you do?
Smash. For a 21 to hit.
Oh, you shatter that skeleton. It only had 5 HP left, which I think is below your minimum right now.
Yes.
So you shatter it.
And I try to get to the next one if I can reach one.
Yeah, you realize the battle's going on up above deck. So you run up on deck, and you see that there is a skeleton in a tree about 20 feet above you. There is a skeleton about to be blasted away in radiant light on the canoe below you. And then there's a skeleton 10 feet underwater that you probably can't hit. If you have a throwing weapon, you could hit that one in the tree.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a javelin at the one in the tree because it confuses me.
All right, you hurl it at the tree because you wonder, how did a skeleton get in the tree? That's an important question.
For 9 damage, I got a 26 to hit.
You shatter that skeleton. The skeleton in the tree disappears, leaving only the skeleton in the midship who's about to get blasted away, and then the skeleton deep underwater. In fact, the skeleton... Or actually, Phil, it's your turn. There's a skeleton about to get blasted away, but you look down and you see that skeleton underwater. He hasn't been chasing up. In fact, you see the skeleton emerge from the hull carrying a chest. He's emerged from the back hull carrying a chest, and the skeleton clearly looks like it's trying to flee the ship underwater, dragging this chest away. What do you do, Phil?
Don my shield. I yell, "He's got booty," and I move towards the skeleton with the chest.
So he's underwater, like beneath the boat, about 10 feet beneath the boat. So what kind
of
movement do you do?
My shield in my hand.
All right, so you plunge down.
I don my shield, I run, and I'm paddling with my hands, and I have a shield in one hand, and I have my arcane fire in my other hand.
All right, that seems difficult.
And I yell, "He's got booty," as I jump in the water.
All right, plunge into the water, chasing after him. You're keeping pace with the skeleton as you draw him forward. The skeleton tries to flee, but you're keeping pace with him as you go. Darwin hunkers down, grabbing at his notes to make sure they're not bloodstained. Rubert, there's a skeleton about to get obliterated midship. You see Phil chasing off after a skeleton with booty. They're about 50 feet away from you. What do you do?
I'm going to swim the 40 feet, and then I'm going to lightning lure it.
Ooh, and that'll pull it up towards Phil. All right, so you yank it in the water.
Yeah, DC 15. Yeah, dude. Yanking that water off. DC 15 strength.
Skeleton got a 19. He pulls himself underwater hard and resolute. It's like the weight of the chest holds him down. Like, you pull the skeleton, but the chest is too heavy. So it just kind of, like, that acts as a grounding rod, basically. And it doesn't shock him, and he keeps going.
And then with my bonus action, I'm going to move the tentacle 30 feet next to me.
All right, so the tentacle comes chasing off next to you. And are you finished?
Yeah, as the tentacle, like, slurps into the surface of the water, and then, like, an inky black, like, shadow travels across the water next to me, and then, like, the inverse of the tentacle rising above the water comes below the surface of the water, and it's just, like, dangling below the surface.
All right, that's an awful word to use, slurps. I hate that.
It's slurps, yeah.
All right, so Jules, what do you do? There's a skeleton about to get seared with radiance, but there's one trying to flee underwater with a treasure chest.
Gotta save the booty, obviously. Let's get the one with the treasure chest. Told a dude.
All right, you drag it to the doom. It gets a 7.
20 damage.
You rolled 20 damage. The skeleton collapses, withering, as there's some clear sign that its deal, its debt to the sailor's devil is paid, its deal with him stricken. And as you break that link keeping this pirate from the depths, his soul is broken and freed. The bones drop to the ground, the chest sinking and suckering there. Celeste, you watch as the skeleton, now searing under the radiant starlight that you've conjured forward, is dying. He gets a 3. Go ahead and make a roll your
3d10. 21 damage.
Fuck. Yeah, you explode the shit out of that skeleton, destroying the last of them. The last of the skeletons is destroyed, and you all take a moment of breather, looking around to make sure there's no more skeletons pulling up, but shattered broken bones are scattered about.
Can I still cast Healing Word on myself?
Yeah, you still have those benefits of your chalice. Cool.
15.
Okay, so you're probably...
Wait, is Nash still... Did Nash get injured?
Nash did get injured. He took 5 damage.
Okay, I'll give 5 to him, and I'll take the other 10.
All right, that puts you both at full. Look at that. So you have a treasure chest sunk down in the sand beneath the boat, about 10 feet underwater. How do you get that out?
I will go grab it.
Well, sure, you could just hold your breath.
Don't worry, I got it.
Oh, okay.
And I'll swim down with my swim speed and water breathing.
Zilnirn also has hold breath.
I'm struggling underwater. Zilnirn, help.
Phil's like sinking by his shield.
I have my shield in my weapon in one hand, and I'm obviously struggling with my peg leg.
Actually, Zilnirn,
you're busy with the chest, and I'm like, whoa.
Actually, Zilnirn, you get the chest, I'll get Phil.
Okay.
At first, you assumed that, like, oh, the shield will act as like a surf or like a kickboard, but then it just started sinking and dragging you down. all right, so Phil, Rubera, you rescue Phil. Zilnirn, you step down into the water, hoisting up the chest, and you bring it back up onto deck. You find a relatively level spot that you can set it to where it won't just slide back down into the water. And you all kind of gather around to see what treasures these pirates had. The lock is long since rusted off, so it's easy to open. Fortunately, it does seem like they managed to keep the... like, in contents inside from being water damaged. Clearly, these pirate skeletons had enough sense left in them that they were still obsessed with keeping their booty clean, and their booty worth something. Inside, you find a black velvet mask stitched with silver thread. It's the like used in grand Agdian masquerades. It could probably fetch 25 gold pieces, and while there's not much use for Agdian masquerade masks here in the Shattered Isles, if you ever find yourself needing to sneak into a noble masquerade, you've now got a mask for it.
I know about these. The people at the Swingers Guild pay top dollar for them.
Why is it a guild?
That was that pineapple tattoo that Jules was talking about a while ago, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, huge on the mainland. I didn't know there was a clan out here.
You find 2 sets of vestments, like robes and or like shawls and stuff, that are made of cloth of gold. It's clearly meant to be worn by a clergyman of some land-lover god with big star blazing on it. There's some disagreement among you about which land-lover god this is for. No one here follows the bright city of Hestivar and its Church of Hestivarianism. That's lame. That's some farmer god, Palor, which is, as my notes say, boring in all caps.
I just won that right.
You do, I guess, because you actually weren't from the sea. But the sea folk here look at it and see this landlubber farmer god that's just kind of soft and sad. But you figure these robes could, to the right person, each fetch 25 gold pieces. You also find a silver ewer, similar to the pewter ewer. Wow, I hate that series of words. The pewter ewer that you found from the temple, although this one is made of silver and clearly of new, non-significant make, also worth 25 gold pieces, and you find a set of Zilcomnis golden bracelets that are basically large bracelets that run up the length of your arm, and it's worth 25 gold pieces for this set. So all told, you found 5 items, each worth 25 gold pieces. So you could probably pretty reliably find someone to buy those back in Port Providence for the total of 125 gold pieces. However, there are things of less clear value. You find an amulet of woven patterns of woven beadwork patterns that's of old Zilcomnus design. This amulet bears many intricate warding glyphs of the Monmagi witch doctors. It is beautifully ornamented with the teeth of the terrible thunder lizard birds that live in the Ancienne Chapelle. You can tell first from looking at the wards and symbols on it that anyone attuned to it is guarded from divination and hidden from the perception of others. But like all Monmagi witch doctor charms, the charm works too well. And the jewels quickly hones in on these, having detect magic on allows them to quickly notice that this was a magic item. The charm also dampens your own senses. Anyone wearing this amulet, or the Zilcomnus amulet of proof against detection and location, has disadvantage on perception checks while wearing it. So it makes you immune to or undetectable by divination magic, but it also makes it to where you're bad at noticing shit because you too are having your senses hidden. Interesting. Hidden from divination magic. Does that mean divining spells can't target you? It technically explicitly states you can't be targeted by such magic or perceived through magical scrying sensors. A person can't gain the benefit of any spell from divination if they have this item on. That's interesting.
So does that mean, like, Celeste's cards wouldn't have any effect on them?
Yeah.
Does that mean you're also, like, hidden from gods?
Anybody who relies on, like, divination school spells, yeah.
My cards tell the truth. You can't hide from the truth.
Yeah, that thing's worthless. Pass it over here.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this in the ocean with other valueless things. What's the spell? Like, not augury, but guidance. You can't use guidance on someone with amulet of proof against detection and location. Because it just says...
Could I not heal them either? Because that's... Or is that a separate type of spell?
No, because your healing technically is restoration still. Or is it restoration? That's not a skill type. What is that spell?
Enchantment?
I think it's conjuration. Regardless, it's only things with the school type divination. So it's also clearly not a wear all the time, but wear when you feel you specifically need to wear it. One such example is the divination magic allowing a kraken to trail your captain. Although at this point your captain seems to have given in to the deep, so maybe you don't need this.
Yeah, I need the Eyes of the Deep on me for my new cool magic.
So you found Amulet of Proof Against Detection and Location. And then finally is an item that I actually don't understand how fits in this chest, but say you found it nearby. It was on the skeleton who fell in the water. You pulled it up. You find what you soon identify as a deadsman's axe. Like a headsman, but a deadsman's axe. This deadsman's axe has a hilt crafted of the great bone off of some leviathan from beneath the waves. It is a great axe, and its blade is a disturbing black steel. It is icy cold to the touch. This deadsman's axe, or a headsman's axe like this, are kept aboard ships that sail in the drowned fleet, and they are meant to behead those who betray the sailor's devil. It's said that the heads of that anyone executed by this is cut off from the sailor's devil, and their heads are cast down into the deep to suffer whatever fate the eldritch gods have for a disembodied undead head that can never be killed and is forced to sit there in the crushing depths of eldritch awfulness forever. The blade is an extension of the sailor's devil's will, and it pains any user to wield it against his servant. So this is a vicious weapon, a vicious great axe. However, it sends non-mechanical ouchies into you if you use it on undead. But it is a vicious great axe, which means... What does vicious mean again? Oh god. A vicious weapon is one that is vicious. I think it makes where you deal an extra amount of damage on a crit. Yeah, when you roll a 20 on your attack roll with a vicious weapon, you deal an additional 2d6 damage of the weapon's type. So it's a great axe that deals plus 2d6 on a crit.
Zelnarn, I think I have a new axe for you.
Yeah, it sounds really good. It's a little messed up, though. Is it okay to use?
Absolutely. This'll fit in great.
I am Captain.
Can I add my radiance to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless that specifically says you can't do that to magic weapons?
Yeah, you can't infuse magic weapons.
Ah. So you lose plus one by wielding it, but you gain plus 2d6 on crits, which is dope too.
We can just kind of switch it back and forth when you gotta swing the axe, you know? Goddamn.
That would mean a crit with your weapon is 5d6 if you're raging, right? Barbarians have a bonus to crit, don't they?
Or is that not yet. I don't know if I have that yet. Could be useful eventually, but I think I still get more damage right now.
But isn't coolness more valuable than more damage?
Zelnarn actually likes his damage steady, not like erratic like that.
That's fair.
Zelnarn, let me know when you're ready, because I could enchant something else for someone else whenever you want to switch, but I like that radiance one too. It's bright in the water. Too.
All right. Does anyone take the amulet of proof against the Zilcomnus amulet of proof against detection, location, and your own perception?
Phil was serious when he's like, "That's worthless. Give it here."
Does like anyone fight? Actually wants it, or
yeah, me as a character, I want it. The background is Phil thinks he has people tracking him that he doesn't want to be able to track him.
Perfect.
Does this also mean that the Kraken will no longer track us because he's wearing it?
Only if it's Rubert wearing it. That's who's marked.
Dang.
All right. So you have looted the abandoned pirate ship. It's not abandoned. Haha, I got you guys. And are free to continue moving on. So it's about halfway through the day, as you've been making great time navigating through the Azure Stand. You're delving deeper and deeper now that you've realized that Jules can simply work the detect magic and follow where the water flows, and it's making sure there's no risk of getting lost. So any time wasted that way is making sure you're easily able to find yourselves. So, guided easily by the detected magic of Jules, as Jules reaches out and sees the ley lines of primal magic coursing through the water, and following that raw elemental primal might that seems to be coming from this crystal lake, or this crystal pool at the heart of the Azure Stand, you move your way towards it, rowing and pulling along. Your pack's now laden with a bit of loot, something to show to the crew as a little note of, look, we do find loot sometimes. And as you pull your way through the water, you still find that it is lush and filled with life, even this deep in. You pass over a crocodile snug in the water. You later see a school of fish moving about, several snakes slithering through it, and even the trees around you, you see signs of life. You never quite see the land octopus that Darwin Nash referenced, but you do see several of the giant tree crabs, which you've actually encountered before in your first foray onto an island. You hear the chirping of countless birds living amongst the trees, and you realize just how lush this ecosystem is. But as you move through such bountiful life, you soon find a sign of death. and worse than the undeath you just found. You find yourself rowing into a copse of mangroves with corpses grown into them. A corpse copse, if you will. You see that each of these trees has wrapped and tangled in its roots, bones and bodies still garbed in their chainmail with withered skin still on them, not nearly as old and bleached as the skeletons you just fought, but old bodies nonetheless, wrapped in imperial chainmail with tattered bits of tabards. You see them snarled and almost and likely drowned as they're trapped in what looks like prisons of roots. Scraps of mail are scattered about, rusted steel in the water. As you row over these, or by these bodies, this copse full of corpses in the trees, you count 10, maybe 15 bodies melded into these trees, joined and pulled in as if the tree itself is feeding on them. And though it doesn't, you don't quite see any sort of root delving into them, you can't help but remember the last time you sought out a tree offering a panacea, the vampire tree beneath the sunless citadel. But soon your path is blocked. The river flows by you, the waterway coursing through, the trail of arcane magic, or of primal magic, flowing through the water beneath you, clear as day for Jules to see with their detected magic's ritual still about them. But the path is blocked for you by a great mangrove who's grown across the water, pushing through it, and joining up with the other side, effectively creating a barrier. Sorry, great mangrove is a bit of a stretch. It's a thicket of smaller mangroves who have grown up in front of you. The Naughty Dreams cannot pass deeper in through this water. The canoe can't pass deeper in along this stream. And yet, looking at it, the other side of this thicket of mangroves is absolutely where you need to go. And as you look at it, you're faced with an option. With axes and machetes, you could chop through this thicket, 10 minutes, and be on your way with the boat. Or you'd have to abandon the Naughty Dreams and continue the rest of this journey on foot. That is, unless you think you're strong enough to haul this 15-foot-long, 10-foot-wide boat out of the water and portage it across the ground and down into the water on the other side of this thicket of trees and young mangroves. Doing so would pose quite a risk, though, because failing to carry it might result in dropping it and thus breaking the Naughty Dreams, making further use of it quite difficult. What do you do? Do you hack through? Do you abandon it? Or do you try? Do you risk the Naughty Dreams by carrying it?
I don't think we should hack these trees. This place is sacred, I guess, is the first word that comes to mind.
I don't think we should carry the Naughty Dreams. This boat is sacred. The first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
What's the barrier exactly? Like, I wonder if I could use shape water in some creative way.
It is trees.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, thick vegetation.
That would be a problem.
Celeste, what do you think?
I think the cosmic omens are on our side, so we should tie up the boats and hope for the best. And let magic continue to guide us and the stars.
I would agree. I don't know about tying them up. I think anchoring them here in the water, but I don't trust the shore either. So I think anchoring them and then finding our way to the shore and continuing on foot, but seeing how this grove treats other ships, I don't trust tying our boat to the trees.
Fair. I agree.
Any objections?
Not for me.
So it sounds like the goal is to anchor them here in the water, cross over on land, and then follow the water on foot. Meaning you'll have to be doing off and on swimming and walking for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the plan. We don't want to destroy the ship, and we don't want to destroy the grove. Yeesh.
All right, you...
Seems like the worst option, but here we go.
All right, you choose to... you ignore, or you anchor down the Naughty Dreams and the canoe... Darwin Nash sort of complains a bit and says, "This might be a terrible idea. What if we can't find our way back from the to the boats?"
What do you suggest then, Nash?
I suggest we hack our way through that plant. Perhaps it will agitate the forest a little, and he looks at one of the corpses, like, joined into the tree's roots. But perhaps a little agitation might be necessary.
How do you know that it wasn't the hacking that caused all of... And I, like, point around. I'm like, this.
I suppose you're right. We don't. He steps out of the boat and onto the gnarled roots, kind of tripping as he does. There's no clear land to walk on, so you're kind of scrambling along roots and, for the most part, going to have to, like, swim and pull your way along through this, the rest of this mangrove forest.
Hey, really quick. Jules, can you still see, you know, magic things? How much time has passed?
You have a few minutes left on it still.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do I see?
Yeah, just, all right, so hear me out. What if we took, you know, have you ever heard the story of, out of character, what's Shattered Isles version of Hansel and Gretel?
Gransel and Hedel.
Jules, have you ever heard the story of Gransel and Hedel? You know, what if we... We took Zeldnirin's, like, nice treats. Aren't those, like, magically infused? And we sprinkle breadcrumbs so we know our way back to the boat. Can you see them? Here, look at it. Can you see it?
The treats?
They are not magic. They're just really high quality.
They are magically delicious, but they're not actually magical.
Damn.
Sort of like
shut the fuck up now.
Lucky Charms situation.
Although I like the way your brain's thinking.
I mean, we could leave, like, ropes, couldn't we, if we wanted, to follow the similar idea?
Assuming that the path is only 500 yards away, right? Or 500 feet away, right? That's probably the most amount of length of rope you got.
Well, we could leave, like, other stuff.
All right, so let's hear me out. What if I just, like, make a notch in each tree that I walk by?
Bruh, it's your funeral.
Could we...
Well...
You can try, but I'm not gonna...
I think Phil would be superstitious.
Am I seeing anything in the trees that looks, like, different than the other? Like, what am I seeing?
You're in a copse of trees with water flowing through it. There's bodies stuck in it. Nothing is magical save for the fact that everything here is magical. Okay. And the stream has that flowing thick vein of magic through it.
I have a question.
Yes.
So my uncle... is the caretaker of Obed High, which is also mangroves. So is there any way I could, like, look back into my memories to see if my family told stories about his, like, caretaking of the mangroves to see, like, what could we do so that way we could follow our steps back or, like, have some kind of, like, guess?
You can make make a religion check.
Oh, I only got 9.
You don't have any recollection of specific tales about how to get out of the mangrove, mostly because Obed High is a relatively small mangrove, and it's pretty hard to get lost in. But the best you're able to think is... Basically, your solution you've been using, Jules can auto-succeed you through them all, won't work on the way back, is what you're realizing.
Oh, shit.
Because you could follow this magic stream, and eventually following the magic stream will get you out, but it won't necessarily get you back to the Naughty Dreams. So if you abandon the Naughty Dreams here to get back to the Naughty Dreams, you'll have to use actual skill checks to find your way back. And failure might result in you get out, but you didn't find the Naughty Dreams. So choosing to leave the Naughty Dreams here is a legitimate risk. You could lose the boat.
So can we try to lift it? Have we tried to pick it up just to, like, see how hard it is?
So it's sort of like getting the angle is super fucky, and there's not ground that you can really stand on. So it is doable. It's going to be very hard, though.
Still doesn't want to take the Naughty Dreams out of the water.
So basically, if you want to haul it out of the water and move it over, because it's a pretty large boat, it is going to be a DC. Where did I write it? I have my numbers. Where are my numbers? Here we are. It is going to require a DC 20 strength check to haul it. Failing, though, will result in dropping the Naughty Dreams and damaging it.
Yeah, it's probably not worth the risk.
There's no fucking point. Why do we take the boat out of the water? What if we have to leave?
How about we leave?
And we're leaving before dark. It's not going to be an issue.
The thought of taking it out is to get it to the other side of the water so you can use it still. But yeah.
Well, what if we leave rope as far as we can, leave something else as far as we can, and then we locate object on our way back?
Do you have that?
Yeah, and that's up to 1,000 feet.
Could we just locate object on the boat?
I'm just thinking if it's farther than 1,000 feet, we won't be able to.
You have traveled more than 1,000 feet already, but otherwise it will work, yeah.
That's a good plan.
All right. Do you follow that plan?
Yep.
Yeah, we anchor the boat. Go around. We'll find the Naughty Dreams again, Phil, I promise.
Everyone, just remember, the Elementist is zenith of us right now. So we'll just follow it back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to promise me I'm going to find the boat. We're going to find the fucking boat. I'm just annoyed we don't just chop this shit down. It's a waste of our time. We're burning daylight by doing this. But I agree. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to speak over you. Let's go.
All right. Grumbling and disagreeing. No crystal tree in pocket. Risking the boat. You trudge your way out of it and splash down on the other side of new growth mangroves, stumbling down into the water. To your good luck, on this side of the buff of trees and fresh growth, shrubs, basically, the water is only 5 feet deep. So as long as no one here is a dwarf or shorter, you are able to stand in the water, albeit it's salty and it's soaking into your arms and armor, and it's a pretty miserable experience. But it is warm water, and it actually is refreshing to the taste. Despite being salt water. But as you splash down into that water, you feel curiously vulnerable now. Darwin Nash has his notes sealed up in a oil bag or an oilcloth bag that's waterproof, and grumbles about how he's not going to be able to record any of this. But you look out into the mangrove in front of you that you're about to start wading your way through. You start wading your way into that mangrove, looking out to it and feeling vulnerable. You recall all of the alligators you've seen. You recall talk of quippers, and you realize without the boats, you now feel quite vulnerable as you pass into the oldest growth pieces of the Azure Stand.
Chaotic normies. guys, what's up, and welcome to the spooky season. It's officially Spooktober. Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening. Be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are sold. No new announcement this week, but just wanted to check in, see how all you are doing. Sure to send any questions, concerns, comments, and your favorite jack-o'-lantern carvings to chaoticnormalpod@gmail.com, or any Halloween costumes. Just see those photos, dress up as your favorite chaotic normal character, and have no one understand the reference. But yeah, that's it. Nothing new. Doing good. Doing okay. Doing great. And yeah, I'll see you at the movies.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.